All the top stories in state and national politics, it's time for this week's edition of All Things Political. Good morning, I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Kathleen Dunn this week. It's 7 minutes after 9 a.m., and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later in the hour, I'll talk to Patrick Marley with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about some of the top state news stories. We'll start, though, with the news from the national scene. Joining me is Aaron Blake, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, thanks for joining. Now, I wanted to start with a couple pieces you've written recently on the presidential race. A lot of the attacks on President Obama, coming from the Romney campaign and the Republican side in general, focus on a couple of quotes from recent speeches. The money quotes are, "You didn't build that, and it worked." Can you give us some background on what's going on there?
Sure. These are a couple of comments that Obama made at some various campaign or political events, one being "you didn't build that" and the other being "it worked." Both were references, obviously, to the top issue that's on people's minds right now, which is the economy and his plans for how to get the country back on the right track. What the Republicans have done is successfully taken these kind of two and forward little snippets and effectively use them in some advertisements. That hasn't made the Democrats happy because the ways in which they've been used, they feel, and a lot of our fact checkers feel, are out of context and don't actually reflect the meaning of what President Obama has tried to say. But oftentimes in politics, what matters is not so much the context, but the words that are used and how effectively they're able to be used by the other campaign.
And this is nothing new in politics.
No, it's not. I think that we pay more attention to it now, though, because we do have more people doing the fact checking. We've got a very popular fact checker blog here at the Washington Post. There's other organizations like PolitiFact and like FactCheck.org who will take claims like this and evaluate whether or not the campaign is being honest. In the case of these two claims, the overwhelming response has been that the Romney campaign and Republicans have been taking these words out of context. But I think at the same time, most people aren't paying attention to what the fact checkers are saying in these cases. What they see is they see the ads on their television. And so what they're seeing is President Obama saying, "You didn't build that," in reference to small business owners. And it worked in response to his economic plan, which isn't exactly what he was trying to say when he initially said them.
So the context on "You didn't build that" was, and that's the argument on the other side, is you didn't build the infrastructure, the roads, the education system that were important parts of your business, is the case that President Obama says he was trying to make there.
Yeah, in both of these cases, what basically happened is that Obama said something that was operable in the sentence before he said what we call the money quote. When he was talking about "you didn't build that," the snippet makes it sound like he was talking about small business owners didn't build their small businesses, when in fact it seems pretty clear that he was referencing the roads and bridges and various other forms of infrastructure, education, good teachers, things like that, that will one day lead a small business owner to be successful. In the case of "It Worked," he was talking about the tax rates, actually, that were in effect under Bill Clinton, making the case that higher taxes on the wealthy during the Clinton years led to prosperity, whereas during the Bush years, taxes were lowered on the wealthy, and we had an economic collapse at the tail end of Bush's tenure. So those are the context of those comments that Democrats are really pushing, but oftentimes it just gets lost in 30-second ads.
And you say Mitt Romney has been a victim of a similar thing. I think the quote was, "I don't care about the poor or the very poor," or something like that. But there was more context beyond what people said was a pretty shocking quote.
Yeah, there was a couple instances of cases where the Obama campaign and fact checkers have determined this hasn't used the complete context of Romney's remarks. There was the instance where he said, "I don't care about," or "I'm not concerned about the very poor." He was talking about a social safety net that exists that prevents people who are very poor from really having, from losing their homes and things like that. And then there was also the case where he said, "I like to be able to fire people," or something to that effect. He was talking about people who are doing, you know, contract work, basically, people who were performing some sort of a service to him, as opposed to employees of the businesses that he's been involved with as head of Bain Capital. So context is something that's gotten lost on both sides of the aisle. I would say in recent weeks, Republicans have gotten a little bit more mileage out of some ads that may or may not include the full context of what Obama has said.
That's Aaron Blake with The Washington Post. He's a political reporter there. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn on this week's edition of All Things Political. You can join the conversation if you want to get in on the presidential race. Call now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Are you seeing campaign ads? What are the messages in the campaigns that are you finding agreeable or disagreeable? You're worried about the influence of money in politics. 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Aaron Blake, another piece you wrote I wanted to spend a minute on because it was kind of interesting, a new Pew survey on religion in the presidential race. We don't care all that much about Mitt Romney's Mormon religion was the first finding that was interesting. Talk about that a little, if you would.
Yeah, this is a this is something we've been watching for a long time on the campaign trail, which is just what do people think about a Mormon running as a major party presidential nominee? And I think it was perhaps more of an issue in the Republican primary, just because the polling has shown that the Mormon religion doesn't appeal to a lot of evangelicals who may or may not think that this is a cult or something like that. It was a big reason why I think the Romney campaign didn't do as well in Iowa as it did in a lot of other states, because there's a lot of evangelical voters there who may not have a good impression of Mormon religion. But polling has shown that this is generally an issue for about 1 in 5 voters, or at least that 1 in 5 voters will acknowledge that this is an issue for them, that it makes them uncomfortable with him as a presidential candidate. The interesting thing about this survey that came out is that actually more people said that President Obama's religion was a stumbling block for them, was something that made them uncomfortable. And I think what we can attribute that to is the fact that there's still a significant chunk of the American electorate, 17% in that particular poll, who thinks that the president is a Muslim for whatever reason. Only about half of people know that President Obama is in fact a Christian. So I think a lot of misinformation about the president's religion has led people to actually be a little bit more concerned about his religion than they are about Mitt Romney's religion.
But when it comes down to actually voting, on the one hand, the people who believe that President Obama is a Muslim and don't like that probably wouldn't have voted for him anyway. And when it comes to, say, a conservative Republican evangelical voter, do you think that they would still vote for a Mormon Republican over any Democrat?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. The biggest portion of the electorate that thinks the president is a Muslim and is uncomfortable with that is in fact Republican voters and people who were probably going to be voting against Obama in the first place. Likewise, on the other side, the people who have a problem with the Mormon religion tend to be more Democrats than Republicans. But on either side, if you look at, for instance, Democratic-leaning independents or conservative or moderate Democrats, there still is about 10% of each that think that the president is a Muslim. So this is misinformation that has not just penetrated the other side of the aisle. It's also gone a little bit into the ranks of voters that President Obama could potentially woo. And likewise, on the Republican side, there are some Republicans who say that they're uncomfortable with the Mormon religion and the fact that Mitt Romney is a Mormon. But what the polling actually shows is that regardless of whether they're uncomfortable or not, they still are voting for him. So I think that the question here is whether discomfort leads one to eventually vote for the other candidate. And I don't think that polling has demonstrated to us, so far at least, that it's pushing voters away from Mitt Romney. We're going to find out whether or not it pushes people away from President Obama as well.
We'll go to the phones now with questions and comments for Aaron Blake, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Diane in Milwaukee is up next. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I heard that Romney was fundraising for his campaign in Israel, and I thought that foreign money was banned for campaigns. Is that true, and is Romney doing the wrong thing?
Aaron Blake?
Yeah, this is candidates will frequently go overseas to raise money, but they cannot raise money from foreign nationals. They have to raise money from American expatriates who are living abroad. So that's what we're seeing with Mitt Romney raising money in Israel, and it's something that President Obama has done as well. So this isn't all that unusual. There's a lot of wealthy Americans who live overseas. There's a lot of wealthy Americans who live in Israel, and those are the people that the Romney campaign is raising money from.
Thanks for the call, Diane. And that brings up Mitt Romney's trip. He's been in London, Israel. I think Poland is next on his list.
Correct.
What's the goal of Mitt Romney traveling the world?
Well, generally, this is it's a good opportunity to raise money, of course. It's also an example of a presidential candidate proving that they can be a world leader, that they can handle foreign policy and be somebody who can go abroad and command the respect of other nations. It hasn't gone particularly well for Romney. He ruffled a lot of feathers in London, for instance, when he suggested that the city may not be quite ready for the Olympics. He drew some rebukes from big-name politicians over there, including Prime Minister David Cameron and the mayor of London, Boris Johnson. So the question is, how much does this matter at a time when the economy is the major issue? And I think it certainly matters less. But a lot of people will be watching this trip and trying to determine whether or not Mitt Romney has the bona fides it takes to be a commander-in-chief. And I think one interesting thing this week is that over the weekend, Newsweek magazine came out with a cover that basically suggested that Romney has proven himself to be something of a wimp when it comes to foreign policy because of what's going on during his trip overseas. So we're going to be keeping an eye on whether or not that narrative catches on. But I think more than anything, people are still focused on the economy, and those are the issues that are going to, you know, control the result of this election.
Let's stick with the economy a bit. A bit of bad news for the American economy out on Friday, I think it was. Slow growth, 1.5% in the second quarter. Revised numbers showing lower growth than we'd thought in the first quarter of the year. If there's this constant drumbeat of economic news like that, how tough a hill is that for President Obama to climb to re-election?
Yeah, you know, this is a really interesting thing about this race. All the polling shows that approval of President Obama on the economy is very low. Around 40% of the American public approves of the job that he's done with the most important issue by far on the electoral radar. But at the same time, I think that the media's role in this race and the kind of proliferation of the political media has made it so that we're talking about a lot of things. And there's only so many ways to talk about how bad the economy is. And that's why I think in recent weeks we've seen focus on a lot of other issues, including Romney's foreign trip, including his time at Bain Capital and things like that. I think that the media has created an environment where there's room for a lot more talk about other issues. And so the Obama campaign has taken this and has effectively, you know, call it changing the subject or call it trying to make an issue of Mitt Romney in this campaign. They've really successfully pushed a number of issues that have taken the political dialogue away from the economy in a lot of ways. And the question is whether or not that's actually getting through to voters. I still think that most people aren't paying all that close attention, but they do see the fact that the economy is not great in their daily lives, and that's going to have a lot of impact on their votes come November.
That's Aaron Blake with The Washington Post. He's covering the presidential race and other national political issues. You can join the show at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We're also watching for your emails at talk@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Kathleen Dunn. It's All Things Political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll turn to some state political news. The strange story of Senator Tim Cullen leaving the Democratic caucus and back in. We'll look at the U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin and some other issues. Right now, though, we're looking at the national political scene with Aaron Blake. He's national political reporter for The Washington Post. We'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Joe in Harpers Ferry, Iowa is up next. Hi there, Joe.
Hello. I'm curious. You talk about political advertising. When you talk to the general public, you hear it on the media. They say they're tired of it. They seem to see right through it. They're fed up with it, how slanted it is. Yet when you talk to or you hear from the pundits, so to speak, about how things work, how these ads are beneficial for the campaign, I'm curious which is correct. And if they are effective, is it for the independents? But I would assume independents are fairly discerning people and they're skeptical. So wouldn't they be obviously aware of what's going on with political advertising?
Do these political ads work, Aaron Blake?
If you ask anybody who works in politics, they'll say that the answer is yes. People do get sick of negative advertising, and they're going to be increasingly sick of it as the race goes on. We're only in July right now, and already people are tired of it. But what happens here is that even as people are turned off by the negativity, they retain the negative messages that are in the ads. I was talking to a colleague recently who was talking to his parents about this, and you know, his mother said, "I'm so sick of all this negative advertising." But when you talk to her about the race itself, the things that she was talking about were a lot of the negative messages that were contained in the ads. So while she was tired of the ads, she in fact had been paying attention to them, and the message that was contained in them had really hit home with her, and she was effectively reciting the charges that were levied in those ads. So I think if you look at the polling on this, it will tell you that people hate negative advertising, that it turns them off. But what you can't really see in the polling is how much of those messages they retain and how much it affects their voting. And I think that if anything, politics over the years has proven to us, whether through the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth in the 2004 presidential campaign or in any other number of instances, that negative advertising works. And that's why people keep doing it. If it didn't work, we'd see a lot of people running positive ads and they'd be winning offices. But that's not the way that it works.
Well, I always wonder if these things don't work, then the people running all these campaigns and PACs and whatnot must be really, really dumb because they're spending a lot of money on these things.
Yeah, you know, these guys, these people, you know, the political world and being an insider in Washington is not a good thing to be these days. But there's a lot of very smart people who know what it takes to win elections. And the fact that we've seen over the course of the past month here, basically exclusively negative advertising in the presidential race from all, all the campaigns, all the outside groups, it's been almost 100% negative. There's a reason for that. That's because they know that this is what works, and that may not be something that people like or that's warm and fuzzy, but that's the reality of our political system right now, and it takes a lot to change something like that.
Thanks for the call, Joe. You're hearing Aaron Blake from The Washington Post. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. It's All Things Political. Next on the line is Pat in Chippewa Falls. Hi there, Pat.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. The negative ads may work, but ultimately what they've really achieved, other than basically putting somebody in office through dishonesty, is they've destroyed our system of democracy. But it goes all the way back to the way our elections are now financed, which, of course, ultimately the icing on the cake was the Citizens United decision. I'm not a big TV watcher at all, but I do hear people talk about what they're seeing on TV, and I wonder why they don't just turn the TV off.
Gotcha. Thanks for the call, Pat. So she brings up the Citizens United decision, Aaron. How has that changed spending in this presidential race?
Well, it's been remarkable, actually. The advent of super PACs and a lot of times affiliated nonprofits who don't have to disclose their donors have essentially kept Mitt Romney competitive throughout the last few months here. If you look at advertising dollars spent by each campaign, the Obama campaign has spent far more in recent months trying to define Mitt Romney, whereas Romney's campaign has essentially been building up its cash reserves for the remainder of the campaign. But even as that's happened, there's been just as much advertising on the Republicans' behalf as there has been on the Democrats. And that's because Republicans have a huge advantage when it comes to these super PACs and these nonprofits that are running what are, you know, ostensibly issue ads, but also are negative against the president. So it's essentially led to Republicans being able to outspend the Democrats over the course of this election. And that's not something that generally happens when you have an incumbent president getting outspent in an election. So we're going to be seeing in the next few months here whether or not Democratic donors step up and send similar amounts of money to super PACs. But at least at this point, there's no evidence that that the Democratic donors have the same appetite to fund these super PACs as Republicans do.
I just wanted to get your take on a few more issues before we let you go. Dick Cheney this weekend said, among other things, he thought the choice of Sarah Palin as a vice presidential candidate was a mistake. Why did he say that?
Because Dick Cheney can be honest about what he thinks. You know, this is something that a lot of Republicans acknowledge privately, but very few of them say it publicly because they don't want to turn off the Tea Party, which is still very loyal to Sarah Palin. They don't want to turn off social conservatives who are still very loyal to Sarah Palin. But a lot of Republicans do think that her selection in the 2008 presidential race as John McCain's vice presidential pick didn't exactly pan out as they had hoped. And since then, she's become much more unpopular nationally, and her disapproval ratings and her unfavorable ratings have shown that. So what Cheney was saying was essentially something that a lot of people already think. He just happened to be somebody with significant standing saying it publicly. But one thing that's interesting about that is that we're seeing Sarah Palin kind of reassert herself and endorse in a bunch of Senate races around the country and trying to get her conservative candidates through the primary. So we're going to get a good sense of whether or not Sarah Palin is still kind of relevant to the political process in this country in the coming weeks here.
And of course, here this year, Republicans are picking another vice presidential candidate. Any thoughts on when that might happen and who it might be?
Well, I think that there was some talk a couple of weeks ago that it may happen before the Olympics, rather. I wouldn't expect it to occur at any point during the Olympics, just because that's such a an attention hog for people. If he announced it right now, it wouldn't get all the attention that they'd like it to. This is a great opportunity for him to, you know, put forward somebody who's exciting, somebody who people want to get to know and really get a bump in this election. And he's not going to do it during a time when people are otherwise occupied. So I would look for it after the Olympics and probably closer even to the beginning of the Republican National Convention in late August, which is generally right around that time is generally when presidential candidates will announce their running mates. So I don't think any reason to think that he'd do it any differently.
And then finally, we talked about political ads. Are we going to see a lot of presidential ads in Wisconsin? Do the candidates, do the PACs look at Wisconsin as a battleground state in the presidential election?
You guys are going to be seeing a ton of advertisements over the course of the next 3-plus months here. You know, it's interesting that Wisconsin has become such a battleground. I think most people consider it to be one of 8 or 9 toss-up states in the country. And the presidential advertising has reflected that fact. Basically, these campaigns will run ads in these 8, 9, 10 toss-up states and nowhere else because it's not worth their investment to advertise in a state where it's not competitive. Wisconsin is seen as one of the real battlegrounds in that group. It's going to be a place where everybody's going to be advertising, and that combined with the Senate race that you guys have out there, there's going to be no rest for the weary as far as negative advertisements in this campaign.
Aaron Blake, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That was Aaron Blake. He's a national political reporter for The Washington Post. You can see his work on the Fix blog there. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in this week for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. We're going to turn now to issues in state politics. We've got Patrick Marley, Madison Bureau reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Well, Aaron Blake left us with a pretty good setup there. The U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin, I know that's an issue you've been following, a debate going on right now, I think it's just in Green Bay Radio. What are you watching? What's some of the big news on the campaign trail there?
Well, yeah, I think the debate today is going to be a big deal. We'll see what they have to say. It's just one of two debates that we're going to have here in the final 2 weeks of the campaign. It's taken a pretty nasty turn in the last 3 weeks with the advertising really heating up. Hovde, Newman, and Thompson all going after each other, and you know, I think we're going to really see just how dirty it's going to get between now and August 14th.
Let's look at some of the strengths and weaknesses of those candidates, starting with Tommy Thompson. He's been ahead in a lot of the polls. Obviously, he leads in name recognition, but he's getting some flack from national conservatives, like the national version of the Club for Growth. They've been targeting him with emails and ads for quite a while now. Is that something that's going to affect primary voters in Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. It's a factor that Tommy Thompson has to be concerned about. He does have the best name recognition. He's, almost everybody in the state has an impression of him. He was governor for 14 years. He was President Bush's Health and Human Services Secretary. So he's got a long record, and with that comes a lot of accomplishments that he can tout and a lot of things that he can point to on his record. It also presents to his opponents a lot of stuff for them to go through and question and critique. And the Club for Growth is certainly doing that, as is Eric Hovde. So that's, the Republican Party has gone more conservative since Tommy Thompson was first elected in 1986. And there's a movement within the party that says he's too moderate. There are a lot of others who say, he was the right governor for the right time, and he'll be the right senator for the right time as well.
And is he successfully making the case that he is as conservative as the Republican Party is today?
Well, that's the case that he's making, and he is leading in the polls. So, we'll see. Though Hovde, we've seen a lot of movement from him. Hovde did tie him in one poll, and in the Marquette poll from early this month, we saw substantial gains by him. I don't know if that's going to be the factor in the race, how conservative or not conservative is Tommy Thompson. I think there's a lot of things, but that's one of the issues that's certainly going to be bandied about.
Rob Ferret talking to Patrick Marley with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's All Things Political. We are covering state politics for the rest of the hour. You can join in. What are your thoughts on the Senate race in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We'll also talk about the kerfluffle in the state Senate among the Democratic caucus. You can join in with your thoughts or questions about that as well. And maybe you're looking ahead at the legislative elections in November. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can always email talk@WPR.org or put a comment at the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Let's look at the other candidates, the not Tommy Thompson candidates. Patrick, first of all, you mentioned Eric Hovde. He's kind of in the opposite boat of Tommy Thompson. He doesn't have that record in politics to point to, but he doesn't have those ready-made campaign ads against him from having to commit himself in a vote.
Right, that's true. He has said that he's following a Ron Johnson model where he is spending a lot of money advertising. He was the candidate who's been advertising the most, the earliest. While the entire state was distracted by the recall race, he was running ads. Tommy Thompson had some early ads too, but for a period was off the air this summer, and only Eric Hovde was on the air. So he had an opportunity to introduce himself to the state, before any of his opponents could really begin to define him. And I think what you're seeing now is those opposed to him are sort of coming out and trying to tell voters what they see as his flaws. But that did give him an early advantage. He's got a tremendous amount of wealth, and he's shown no compunction about tapping into that to spend on advertising.
And then Mark Newman, he's the beneficiary of those Club for Growth ads, among others. Some national conservatives have definitely lined up behind him. He hasn't done as well in the polls. Is there some resentment from the Republican Party over his campaign against Scott Walker, and is that something that's going to influence primary voters?
Yeah, certainly talking to sort of rank-and-file Republican voters, likely primary voters, you do get from them some concerns about his run against Scott Walker. At the time covering that race in 2010, there were a lot of voters you talked to who said, I like Mark Newman's record, but I love Scott Walker, and it seems like this is Scott Walker's time to run for governor, and they wanted Mark Newman to run for Senate that year against Feingold. Eventually, we saw Ron Johnson in that race. And so there was, even back in 2010, some concern among the base about Mark Newman's run against Scott Walker, and given how popular Scott Walker is with the Republicans right now, that's going to hurt him. At the same time, Mark Newman has been able to get these endorsements from some of the most conservative members of the Senate caucus, Jim DeMint, Rand Paul. I think there's five of them altogether. You know, these are power players, and you're seeing it in Mark Newman's national fundraising. He has been getting money from around the country, and I think it's largely because of those connections.
And then we have Jeff Fitzgerald. Maybe in another year he might be at the front of these polls, but he's in a pretty tough field. He's kind of running on his record of supporting Scott Walker's policies. Is he getting lost in the shuffle?
He's getting lost in the shuffle. He's getting lost because he hasn't mounted much of a campaign. I think a lot of people who would be eager to support him have been a little disappointed that he hasn't had a more prominent campaign. He's had fundraising difficulties. He's raised about $145,000, whereas the others are raising in the low millions. And, you know, that's hurt him. He hasn't been on TV. He's the only candidate who hasn't been on TV. He's done some radio ads. He is beloved by base voters who know about him. He's got, you know, he led the assembly through one of the most conservative sessions we've had in decades. You know, he got through not just Act 10, these changes to collective bargaining that were very controversial, but he got the state's photo ID law put into place, although that's under legal challenge now. He got concealed carry. These are issues that are incredibly important to Republicans, and so he's got a story to tell about that. And what he likes to talk on the campaign trail is about, you know, the month-long battle in the Capitol over collective bargaining and how he stood by Scott Walker and saw that through. So I think it's a good message for the party. It's just that he hasn't been able to get it out much because of his campaign fundraising.
And on the other side, with no contested primary, Representative Tammy Baldwin running for the Democrats, what's she working toward as the Republican primary gets closer?
Well, she's used this opportunity to talk to voters statewide through advertising and promote herself in positive messages. Sort of similarly, we talked about Eric Hovde being able to lay that early groundwork. Since she doesn't have a primary opponent and the Republicans are focused on trying to break through the primary, she's been able to, you know, do the biographical kinds of ads, tell voters about who she is. She's well-known in the 2nd Congressional District. That's central Wisconsin, which is with its hub in Madison. But, you know, there are people elsewhere in the state who don't know much about her. She's using this opportunity to get out there and tell them about herself.
The primary for the Republicans is 2 weeks from tomorrow. But this election is bookended by the recalls on one end and the presidential election on the other. Is this going to be kind of a forgotten election? Are people going to pay that much attention?
Well, I don't know. I was talking to some political observers last week, and they made the point that everybody's done a horrible job of predicting turnout for elections this year. you know, the recalls, when they started up, people thought that we'd have poor turnout for an election in the middle of summer. That turned out not to be the case. We had tremendous turnout. People talk about, is there voter fatigue? We've had so many elections already this year, and the presidential's in November. The primary's been moved up a month from when it's traditionally been held the last 50 years in September. So people will be on vacation. People might not know about the change. People might know about it, but sort of let it slip their mind. The only draw statewide to get someone to the polls is the Republican primary. You've got a contested race for Congress and for the seat that Tammy Baldwin's leaving. The Government Accountability Board is predicting 20% turnout, but I don't think anybody really knows.
That's Patrick Marley with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's joining us to talk about state politics for the rest of this hour. You could join in, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Are you paying attention to this U.S. Senate race? Do you think any big shakeups will happen in the state legislature? How about this Tim Cullen news? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Kathleen Dunn this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 10, a guidebook to cities. All of them, past, present, and future. Why we love them, the best way to enjoy them, and more. I'll talk to author P.D. Smith. He's written City, a guidebook for the urban age. This hour, we are talking about state politics on this edition of All Things Political. Patrick Marley, a Madison Bureau reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is our guest. He's joining us on the phone. We've been talking about the U.S. Senate race, some weird news in the state Senate, Patrick, this last week. Tim Cullen was maybe out of the Democratic caucus in the Senate. Now he's back in, it looks like. What the heck happened there?
Yeah, it was pretty weird. Tim Cullen, who's probably the most moderate Democrat in the Senate, has clashed before with the Majority Leader Mark Miller, and the Democrats just took power this month after recall elections. Mark Miller, as all Majority Leaders do, set up committees, assigned committee chairmanships, put people on a Joint Finance Committee, coveted positions, and these came out a little over a week ago. Then last week, Tim Cullen came out and said that he'd been snubbed in the chairmanships, that he'd been offered something that he didn't see as very important, tried to negotiate with Miller about getting better assignments. Miller said no. And so then Tim Cullen came out and said that he was going to leave the Democratic caucus. He was going to remain a member of the party, but was contemplating becoming an independent over this standoff over committees. And then that was on Tuesday. And then on Friday, the two of them came together in a press conference and said that they'd had some conversations and that Cullen was now getting some pretty impressive committee chairmanships and that he was coming back to the caucus.
And how often, you cover the Capitol, how often do these sort of personal things affect what happens in politics under the dome?
I mean, that's always a factor of personal relationships. This one is one that sort of like spilled out of the open far more than usual. Usually you hear these things, you know, they circulate in rumors around the Capitol. Somebody might threaten to quit the caucus, but they wouldn't actually do it, and they wouldn't do it in a public way where they sit down with reporters to talk about it. So it was certainly at a higher level than what we usually see for internal politics of a caucus. But, you know, all of the caucuses, you know, they put forth united fronts, sometimes better than others, but, you know, many people, many personalities, there's always all kinds of internal conflict for both Democrats and Republicans.
Do Republicans have a better sense of party discipline, or at least keeping these things out of the news? I've heard that accusation or stereotype of Democrats kind of fight out more in public more than the Republicans do.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the Republicans, certainly in Wisconsin, in this legislature, you know, have been very disciplined, and they do a good job of keeping their sort of family squabbles behind closed doors. And the Democrats, you know, you see that in both the Assembly and the Senate caucus, that it's much more open, it's much more exposed.
We'll get to phones in just a moment, but speaking of weird interpersonal stuff, you've been following the ethics case involving Supreme Court Justice David Prosser for a while. Some new developments in that. What's the latest?
So we found out recently that he has changed the name of his campaign fund. He won re-election last year to a 10-year term and not expected to run for another term. He changed the name of his campaign fund to the Prosser Defense Fund, and he announced that although it's not a legal defense fund, that he's going to raise money, or he's considering raising money through that to pay for his ethics case, which he says has cost him about $40,000 personally. He's consulted with the Government Accountability Board, which has told him that he can do this. Some people in the campaign finance, people who follow campaign finance law or work in that area, are pretty surprised by this because they say it could open the door for other political candidates to use their campaign funds for an array of sort of more personal type of litigation they might find themselves in.
And then the other news is about who gets to handle his case. So this is the case of him allegedly putting his hands on or around the neck of one of his Supreme Court colleagues. One of the other justices recused herself. Is that right? Was that last week?
Yes. So, you know, this all happened a year ago in June of 2011. Justice Prosser and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley had this altercation, which there are two very different versions of, but everyone agrees that at one point his hands were on her neck. He's got ethics charges against him for that. All but one justice witnessed that incident, were interviewed, and all, even the one who wasn't present, were interviewed by the sheriff's department. No criminal charges were filed against anyone. But Justice Prosser has filed motions or sent letters to all of the justices saying that he doesn't believe that they can impartially sit on his case, that they're material witnesses because they saw it or they were interviewed by police or they have information, and that they're essentially biased against him. He's asked them all to step aside. This last week, Justice Ziegler said that she was going to do that. Justice Rogensack had earlier said that. Justice Crooks has said that he will remain on the case because, in his view, if you don't have four justices willing to hear the case, then nothing happens. The case can't proceed. And he says, you know, it's essential that anybody accused of something sort of has a tribunal to see it through. The other justices haven't told us what they're going to do.
Issue will keep following. Did you ever think as a political reporter you'd ever use the phrase hands around neck and Supreme Court justice in the same sentence?
No, I didn't. But, you know, it's sort of like any preconception over the last year and a half is gone. Like anything can happen in this state, I'm convinced now after, you know, with the Senate Democrats leaving and the biggest wave of recalls in the country and the deep interpersonal differences you have on the Supreme Court, it seems like nothing is out of the realm of possibility.
Rob Ferret talking to Patrick Marley. He's with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking Wisconsin politics. We'll get to some of your calls now, starting with Bob and Nina. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for your guest about the U.S. Senate race and the possibility that, you know, we might go from two Democratic senators to two Republican senators and here in November. And I was just wondering if your guest, if he thought that is Wisconsin really swinging that much to the right, especially if we know the National Republican Party is so far to the right these days. What is the cause for that, or is it just real Wisconsin specific? Because, you know, I still see in the polls that Obama leads Romney, even though it's early, and it seemed to me that in 2010. Ron Johnson ran kind of a non-campaign against, it was just an anti-Feingold campaign. He really didn't do anything himself. So I was just wondering what your guest impression was.
Yeah, I'll jump in there, Bob. Is Wisconsin swinging to the right? And if so, is it a pendulum or are we shifting to the right?
I think it's too early to tell. I think that's a great question. You know, Wisconsin has always been this, what they call a purple state. And in 2010, we saw a huge gains for Republicans. Ron Johnson won. They took over both houses of the legislature. They won the governorship. But you saw similar things happening nationwide. There were a lot of legislatures that changed hands, and it was just a great year for Republicans, just as 2008 was a great year in Wisconsin and nationally for Democrats, and 2006 had been a good year for Democrats. We in Wisconsin have gotten sort of this additional look at where the electorate is between the two major elections in 2010 and 2012 because of our recalls. And, you know, I sort of mixed signals there. For the most part, Republicans were the winners there. The governor became the first governor to survive a recall election. Most of the state senators, the Republicans who were challenged, won. But the Democrats did take three Senate seats over the two cycles and were able to gain the Senate, which is maybe symbolic more than anything, but it is symbolic. So I think it's too soon to tell. You did see those exit polls from the recall that showed enough people who supported both Scott Walker and Barack Obama that they would vote for both, and that you know, Obama was ahead in the polls. I think after November 6th, it's still going to be premature to say, you know, if Republicans made gains, then it's a permanent red state versus it's a shift of the pendulum for the moment. But I don't know which. It could be that we are making that rightward shift on a more permanent basis, or it could be just sort of a sign of the times.
Well, and after any wave election, it seems like we always see books and articles titled "The New Permanent," you know, fill in the blank, Republican majority or Democratic majority, and it's permanent for 2 years,
right.
And then it shifts back.
Right. You certainly saw that in between 2008 and 2010, so time will tell.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob. Back to the phones we go at 800-642-1234. Peter has been waiting in Marinette. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I had a question. Since there's no Democratic primary, if you might see some Democrats jumping over to help the Republicans pick out a candidate.
What do you think, Patrick?
Well, I guess I'm always skeptical of that happening. It's certainly possible. A Democrat could say, I'm going to go to the polls and I'm going to vote for either the candidate who of the four I find that I like the most of them, in case Tammy Baldwin doesn't ultimately win, or go to the polls and say, well, I think this guy would be the worst, perform the worst against Baldwin, so I'm going to choose him. These things never seem to really materialize. They would have to happen on such a concerted size. There's four candidates, so it's like, would the Democrat who's trying to play the role of a spoiler vote for Jeff Fitzgerald, or would he vote for Mark Newman, or would he vote for Eric Hovde? Who, you know, you'd have to have large numbers of people acting in a similar way. Now, there was the same question when we had the presidential primary in Wisconsin in April, and you did see in Dane County, sort of the liberal part of Wisconsin, a good number of votes for Rick Santorum. Those presumably were these spoiler votes. But at the end of the day, you know, the effect was washed out by the support for Mitt Romney. So I think there will be individual voters who decide to do that. But mostly I think Democrats will either stay home or vote in their own primaries. There is a very contested race in the 2nd Congressional District, which is the hotbed of Democrats in the state, or one of them if you take Dane County and Milwaukee County. They've got to replace... they've got to replace Tammy Baldwin, and Mark Pocan and Kelda Royce. That race is getting a little bit nasty. I think people will be focused on that. In Milwaukee, there are a lot of Democratic primaries for legislative races, so if people are tuned in enough at the local level, they would want to have a say in some open seats or some seats where incumbents are being challenged by members of their own party.
And then the way primaries work, you couldn't vote. Say, suppose you're a Democrat in one of those districts, you couldn't vote in your Democratic primary and then cross over and vote in the Republican Senate. Is that right?
That's right. When you go to the polls, you can, no matter what you are in your heart of heart, you don't have to declare your party affiliation. You can vote in either the Republican or the Democratic or the Libertarian primary, but once you choose which one you're voting in, you can only vote in that one.
With an asterisk for the recalls this summer.
Yeah, we don't need to get into that. That's right. Over. That was a quirk of state law.
We're done with recalls forever, or until the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for the call, Peter. David in Rice Lake now. Hi, David.
Yeah, I was wondering, thank you for taking my call, first of all. I was wondering if you feel as if the oil spill down by Madison is going to have any, what will be said by, in the race.
Gotcha. There's 50,000 gallons, I think, of gasoline, if I'm not mistaken. This is not a story I'll admit that I'm super up on. But a leak affecting just a few houses. It was in a rural area. But does something like that, Patrick, influence a race in any way?
We haven't seen any signs of that yet. I don't know of any of the candidates being asked about that or making statements on that. I think that is an issue that very important to the people where it happened to that area. There was this gas leak for some number of hours. And they're trying to do quite a bit of remediation there. But I have not heard anybody weighing in from either side politically about how that needs to be handled. It does not seem to be a big factor in the race.
Looking ahead in our last couple of minutes, what do you think will be one of the main factors in determining who wins the Republican Senate primary?
Well, it seems to be a race about, right now all we see in the advertising is Washington Insider, true conservative, and those issues I think are just going to dominate the debate as to who it's going to be. I think in the general we're going to see issues like the economy and how many jobs we have in the state are going to be sort of the primary factor. In the Republican primary, it's more of this sort of internal factors of who do they think is going to be the best senator, as well as some calculus about who has the best opportunity to beat Tammy Baldwin.
And then let's look just for a moment at the state legislative races around the state. You mentioned that the Democrats are in control of the state Senate, but it may only be symbolic since there's a whole nother election coming up. What are the prospects? Do they have any chance of hanging on to the Senate?
Yeah, and it's also symbolic because they're not in session. You know, they took control at this sort of the quietest time in the Capitol. So it's not just that the election's around the corner, but it's just that there's really nothing happening legislatively. The Democrats have a 17-16 majority. They're going to have a tough fight on their hands to maintain control of it. Some Democrats will say publicly that they, feel good about their chances. They'll say privately they're a little bit worried. The issue is that, every 2 years, half of the Senate is up, And in the presidential years, it's just as happenstance of the maps, it's a better set of maps, better set of districts that are up for Republicans. The Democrats have a real challenge because Jim Holperin is retiring from the Senate. He's from the Northwoods, and that seat, is a place that Republicans can do very well. Jim Holperin and Roger Bresky before him held the seat. They're Democrats, and they had done a good job representing the district. Sort of, we're a good fit for a Democrat from that district. Democrats are a little worried about that race, and Republicans are very optimistic about it.
And then just a few seconds left. Are fans of political advertising going to get all they can handle and more in the next few months?
Oh, it's a great year for those types in Wisconsin for 2012 after the recalls. And, you see it plenty with the Senate race. You're going to see after August that's going to only heat up because it's a crucial race for both sides in trying to gain control of the U.S. Senate or maintain control of the U.S. Senate. The presidential, as your previous interviewee was saying, we're going to see tons of advertising there. So, yeah, it'll be a good time to stay away from your TV.
Thanks to Patrick Marley from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.